Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, this is episode 268. I am Nick Borowski. This is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, doing it live on Sunday nights at 9:15 through our Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Join us if you have an opportunity, but really appreciate if you consume it through the audio. That's great, but we've been doing this live for about a year now, and it is, I think, therapeutic. Misery loves company, and boy, do we have a lot of misery going on with this 2-13 Chicago White Sox team. I don't really have any answers, Pat. Maybe we'll try to figure it out. We'll talk it out. We're going to be mad. We're going to support one another. This is a very trusted area. And if you got comments, jump in. Circle of trust. We could vent a little bit here. But again, with me, as always, chopping this up, my best friend, diehard Sox fan, Pat Hester. Hello, sir.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out the emotions that you should have after a 2-13 start. I think, honestly, for me, Nick, the apathy has already crept in. It's here. It's alive. It's gotten to the point where
there's nothing worse than alive apathy, when that apathy has just come over and taken you over. That's scary.
It's overcome me like just a blanket, like a sheet. It consumes me, but I still have the passion. My son's birthday party was yesterday. Happy birthday to Luke, by the way. Yeah. My son Luke turned 4 today. Had a wonderful birthday celebration yesterday. I'm sitting there and I'm talking with my brother-in-law, who, as you have maybe heard, if you've been a listener for a long time, my in-laws are all Cardinals fans. So I really know they have had a rough couple of years, but you know, for the most part, they've had a winning organization for a long, long time. So it's hard for them to really understand my pain. And he starts asking me questions. I know he's just jabbing, right? He's jabbing at me and he's just having his fun. And I just gain angry. I'm just angered more at the lack of caring, the lack of trying by this organization to try and be good year in and year out. And I find myself just getting fired up over that. But I don't really get fired up over the team, because this team isn't set up to win, Nick. It's just not. They're not managed well. They don't have talent. They're not going to win many games. I almost don't even blame the players for it. They're a collection of brick and mortar guys with no.
I blame Benintendi, but go ahead. I get what you're saying.
There are a lot of brick and mortar guys that are just not, you know, built to win. They're not built to be stars on any team. They're just built to be, you know, backups. They're built to be, you know, okay, average baseball players. They're not built to carry a team to wins. It's just, how can you be upset at that team? So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know about you.
No, that's a good foundation. I agree with a lot of that. I think I've tried to process some of it, especially this past weekend. I mean, they won one game since the last time we talked. As I mentioned, 2-13, worst start in franchise history. They are, you know, the worst in all of baseball right now. 7.5, 8.5, something like that, games back of the first place Kansas City Royals, who are coming to town on Monday. How about that? A run differential of -51. -51. I mean, they're not even second place. Second worst isn't even close to that. You know, so many other offensive categories we can kind of nitpick. Sunday's final, 11-4. The Reds swept the White Sox on the South side. This is the worst 15-game start in franchise history. Our starting pitchers falling off. Last time we talked, that seemed to be kind of a positive thing. Sox were kind of hanging middle of the pack in baseball. Obviously, we could hang our hat on Crochet, who was not really the highlight of the week. Nothing was really the highlight of the week. Maybe Gavin Sheets. We can talk more about that. But Soroka went on Sunday Five runs on five hits, six walks, four strikeouts in four and two thirds. Sox were outscored 27-5 in the series. Did I say it's the worst start in franchise history?
You did. So many people. It's worth mentioning again, though.
But you're right, Pat. And hello to so many people jumping in: Trey and Drew and John and Matthew. And really appreciate everybody still joining us here on Sunday night. Chopping the White Sox stuff up. We are a passionate fan group, and we demand more. We were promised more, and this has been going on for several years. You mentioned it. This is how this team was built. And, you know, you go back, and what really gets me aggravated, you know, but we knew better, right? Because we talked about this in the fall. And if you've been following the Sox for a while, you knew better. The stuff that Chris Getz was saying when he first got hired, right? All lip service, you know, trying to sell it to the fans, especially season ticket holders, folks, investors, maybe folks that are going to be putting in serious money with this team. Well, why should I continue? Well, Chris Getz gave all these different comments, packaged them up nicely. You know, thank goodness we're in the AL Central. I don't think this is going to be a rebuild. You know, we can turn this thing around, be competitive in 2024. I remember that line. You heard Jerry talk about it. I owe it to the fans. You know, I might not be around very much longer. And then he said 10 more years, which, man, wow. Tough to even wrap my brain around that. But, you know, giving accolades to Getz and Getz to Pedro Grifol, you know, no other, they didn't even think anywhere else to look for another manager after that season. Should have never hired Grifol in the first place, but, you know, that's a whole slew of episodes we probably can do. And we'll probably have to when he gets canned eventually. Getz, of course, not a general manager search. He got put right into that job. I get it. They were trying to say a bunch of stuff, and this is a process, and maybe down the line this evens out. I don't know when that is. I'm not seeing any change. I'm not seeing anything, you know, different from what we saw last year. It's worse. It's far worse. Just baseball fundamentals, you know, letting balls drop, errors, you know, getting picked off in the ninth, Kevin Pillar. Sydney, thank you so much for being on and for bringing that to everybody's attention, you know, on Twitter X with the image and the tweet. How are you getting picked off in the ninth? You're down by 5-6 runs. What is going on? Was Bourgeois, was he even there? Or is he still in the dugout, you know, trying to read maps, you know, with his headphones? You know, who's helping Kevin Pillar? Why are you off the bag? You're down 5-6 runs. I mean, where are you going? Your run doesn't even matter. The baseball IQ stuff, all the stuff, Pat, that we were told about through the offseason, we're going to be better. You know, we're going to win on the margins. The gamer stuff, the TWTW, the heart, the baseball. That is all completely gone out the window. And by the way, you didn't build a talented roster. So to your foundational point, this team is built for this. I didn't think it was going to be this bad, but this was the month you were supposed to somehow take advantage of because you're playing the Central most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bunch of hot garbage in a bag. When I mentioned that part to my brother-in-law yesterday about, you know, the Sox mentioning all the time that they are in the Central and they should always be competitive, and it's thank God that we're in the AL Central. My brother-in-law looked at me and he said, they actually say that out loud? And I said, yes, this organization has boasted for years, for some reason, about thank God that we're in this division because we can always be competitive, even though they've only won it. You know, once every 10 years they win the division. So that's a real shame. I guess the disappointing part about the guys, and I mentioned the talent really isn't there, but I was really hoping for, I kind of took the bait, I guess, from sure, Getz on the IQ you know, we're going to be a smarter team or we're going to win on the margins. Yep. And I don't think it would be enough to overcome. I mean, when you look at the Reds, that's a very young, very talented team that, you know, opened a lot of eyes.
They ran all over the White Sox. Yeah. They just shoved it in their face.
Yeah. So that's a team that you look at across the diamond and go, that's a team that even if they had a bad day on the base paths, or even if they had a bad day defensively, they probably got enough to overcome that. We don't have that luxury, and we haven't had that luxury for a long time, Nick. Not since probably, you know, when we won the division ourselves in 2021, when we're banging the ball out of the ballpark all the time and we're an exciting team. We were able to overcome the lack of, IQ on the base pads. We were able to overcome kicking the ball around all the time. We don't have that, and we haven't been able to have that luxury in some time. And then when you take away the stars power on the team, you really are left with what you have. So I don't know when or if it'll ever get better. I don't see how this team rattles off, 3-4 games in a row. I just don't. And you had mentioned too, pardon me, about the pitching, and the starting pitching has kind of fallen off as of late. You know, that's something we kind of talked about weeks ago. It's like, this is not sustainable. This is not a sustainable thing for this pitching staff to continue on its ways with the guys that you have in the starting staff. So, Nick, I don't know. I really get, where are the answers coming from? Why are we still watching this team? So I can't remember who tweeted that to us. Remind me of why we should still watch. I guess it's just because this is all that we really have. We have the luxury, I guess, Nick, of having this. We don't have to go in with any expectation. I can be out at a baseball field all day watching my kids play and all over doing travel sports, and I can check in on my phone and go, all right, 11-4. I got you. We'll move on to the next, and not really give a crap.
Okay, I get that. And that's why it doesn't sting as much, because we expected this team to be, I don't know if bad was the right word, non-competitive. I just felt like they were going to be there. They had to play games because that was the rule, and you had to have a certain amount of players. It was a bunch of warm bodies. They had a couple guys that, could potentially, do well for themselves, contract years. And then, of course, you had Luis Robert Jr. You throw that guy out with an injury. Aloy is Aloy. I mean, this is who he is. I don't think we're ever going to get consistent baseball out of him. I just don't think his body allows it. And we'll get to Moncada, which is a really sad situation, but we really shouldn't be surprised. They're going to be bad. They were built for this. I mean, Ackman's razor. I don't know if you're familiar with this philosophy. Ackman's razor, look for the most simplest, answer in a complex problem or in a complex scenario. Look for the simplest, the most reasonable, and that's your true answer. And when you look at, how are they 2-13? How are they, look at their roster. Look at the construction. Look at the knuckleheads that were put in charge in the front office. I mean, look at where this has been going, with Jerry's, puppet mastery for several years. I mean, that don't try to, maybe we're not platooning the right way, or we're not getting enough matchups, or so-and-so. Stop. This is how it was put together. Now, yeah. I got to say, Andrew Vaughn, I mean, come on. You could go through the lineup and you could single out just about everybody. And I do feel bad for these guys. Sure. But we were told this was going to be a better brand of baseball, like the bad baseball. That's where I say, okay, you might have thought this was going to be a bad team. Sure. In 2024, but we were supposed to be at least a better version of last year. Like, we might not be winning games because we just didn't have the horses, but we're flat out, we're shooting ourselves in the foot here. We're beating ourselves, and we're facing teams that are just better prepared. They play a better brand of baseball and they've got the horses. I mean, when you go, what is it? 1-9 against the AL Central to start things off. You and I were trying to think about some positive things going into the season, like trying to twist maybe a path where this White Sox team could hang around in April and May. And the path was beating your division, because when you looked outside of the AL Central, you saw teams that were built for October and beyond. Mm-hmm. So when you can't beat your division, which is unbelievable, all that talk about, thank goodness we're in the AL Central, they heard that. The rest of the AL Central put that up on their bulletin boards in their clubhouse or whatever, and they took it to heart. And then you can't beat your division. Well, the teams that are coming through, whether it's on the south side or where you're traveling to, they're not going to mess around with you because they're definitely a better ball club. So, I get it. We weren't supposed to be that great. We weren't supposed to be this bad, though, Pat, in this way that they're playing.
Well, then, you know, it's really I'm at a loss for words. I mean, you really can't change it. It's not going to get any better. There's nobody really in the minors that you're going to call up now in this situation and expect that they're going to help. There's no reinforcements coming. The guys that are hurt are going to be still on the shelf for quite some time. You know, I think it was Andrew put in the, or Drew maybe put in the chat, you know, what do you do with Andrew Vaughn? What do you do in these situations? Do you put him down to AAA? I don't know that that really helps him, in my opinion, Nick. And I'll do respect to Drew and saying he wants to see more Gavin Sheets. I get that. You know, Gavin has been the, I guess, one lone bright spot in the lineup and actually doing some type of production. But it's like, listen, you'll let the kid continue to get there and get in the box and get swings. And it's not like he's going to get more at bats down in AAA. And I don't know that his confidence kind of comes back. Maybe it does. Maybe he beats up on some AAA pitching and he feels good and finds his swing. I don't know, but boy, I didn't think we'd be talking about moving a guy like Andrew Vaughn down to AAA. You know, if you would have asked us that maybe after, you know, maybe not last year, but the year before for sure, because we're looking for this guy to be the next guy. You know, really, we thought about this guy being maybe a star on our team. Now, maybe not a superstar in the league, maybe not, you know, an all-star level player, but a guy that you can go, man, when that guy's up to the plate, you know he's going to get the job done for us. And he's just become, you know, I don't know what. I mean, I said it last week. I think the guy is a bust, and he hasn't done anything to prove me wrong since then.
Well, you know, they mentioned, I think it was maybe Nicky Lopez in the post game. There could have been a few that talked about pressing. You know, everybody's trying to press right now. I mean, the wise, mighty Pedro talked about it in his post game comments. Everybody's trying to be the hero. Everybody's trying to be the player that turns it around. And, you know, that's the issue. You know, when you're off to this kind of start, everybody's examining. Everybody's maybe trying something different. Everybody is under the microscope. And with a guy like Andrew Vaughn, that I think he probably is looking at his past and is like, well, I haven't really lived up to what people expected. And I'm not starting that way in 2024 at all. You know, at this point, it's just like, what do you just keep playing him? I guess let him hit his way out of it somehow. I'd like to hear from like the hitting coach. I'd like to hear from you, just get a little insight into the process, because maybe it turns around. But if you're not putting in the work, the correct work, you know, you just nothing's going to change. You're doing the same thing over and over. Benintendi, I mean, woof, that line. His offensive numbers, you know, we heard about the source hand last year. He felt bigger. He felt stronger. He's ready to go this year. He looks like he lost it. Whatever he had, and it definitely wasn't $75 million worth, whatever he had,
It was talked about this week on the radio, at least on ESPN 1000, which is all I can speak for, but you know, is Andrew Benintendi, is that contract the biggest or the worst contract in White Sox history? Now, I know that not going to sit here and probably, you know, because we're talking about it on the fly. But just off the top of your head, would you agree with that statement that the Andrew Benintendi, given the fact of the production that we've gotten, the amount the contract was, and the fact that it's the highest ever given out by the White Sox organization, is it the worst contract that the Sox have ever given out?
Oh man. So I think we get lost in the highest ever with the White Sox is they don't pay anything. So $75 million. So those types of deals that he got, they should have had a lot of those already, you know, so we shouldn't be fixating so much on the money, but because, you know, there has been a lack of those big contracts and, you know, we analyze that part of it. But I mean, I'm not seeing anything productive. I still don't understand the Leury García extension from years ago. We've gave some goofy money to some relievers in recent history. I mean, I think that's something to maybe circle back on for next week. You know, worst contracts in Sox history. How does Benintendi, you know, stack up with everybody else? But it's so like when I say like this roster was kind of built for failure, there were still players that we expected some sort of production out of. And I expected it from Benintendi. I expected it from Vaughn. And I expected it from Robert and Aloy and Mancada. I didn't really feel like Aloy was going to play the amount of games he wanted to play, but I was happy with what he was doing in the spring. I was happy that his body was responding. He was getting, you know, production out of that. But the regular season is a different beast. And we saw the abductor strain. And then now Mancada, Pat, you know, goes down this past week with the same thing, an abductor strain, which looked horrible, him running to first base and what, 3 to 6 months was the timeline. Chris Getz is bullish that, you know, we'll be getting all three of these guys back sooner than expected. But you want to talk busts? I mean, how disappointed are you with Mancada? And I'm not here to like blame, like, well, it's the trainers, it's him, there's a lot of blame to go around, you know, and all there are injuries happening all around, you know, MLB. Why it keeps happening with these three players, you know, we could definitely create our narratives with that. You know, I think Ozzy might have said it, and Steve Paradzinski from Sox on Tap tweeted it out. I think Ozzy said something like, you know, they might be, you know, kind of in shape to look good, but they're not in baseball shape, which is why a lot of these things might be happening. So, I mean, where's your disappointment level with Mancada now?
Well, for me personally, I mean, for those that have been listening to this show for, you know, maybe more than three, how long have we been on together, Nick, you and I? Is this year five?
This is our sixth season, believe it or not. Sixth season. Holy moly. You and I five. I'm sorry.
You and I five together. Yeah, I'm not an original cast member. but I've been saying for at least the first 3 years I've been a part of this show that, you know, when we were doing, and then we didn't even do it this year, did we? Didn't even do season predictions. We normally go through the day, how many home runs, who's going to lead the team.
We were very stats driven years ago. And I think we kind of just eased back on that, knowing what type of year this might be.
And we just thought nobody's going to hit a home run. So why would we pick who's going to hit the most home runs? But I would always go, you know, this is the year that Mancada is our team MVP. Like, if he's going to be the guy that because we'd heard for years about the tools and the talent and where he was when we got him. And I think we also got emotion involved with it because you so wanted it to work out because he was part of the trade that started kind of the, you know, movement in a different direction in terms of we're building up talent. That's going to be, you know, the guys that are going to turn into, not just, you know, good players, but superstar level players. And we're going to have some, and this is one of the guys. And I kept hoping that it would be, you know, him. And I thought, okay, this is left-handed power that we desperately need. This is, you know, and then he turned himself into a pretty good defensive third baseman, which was fantastic. He's a switch hitter. He can cause a lot of problems. He's got a little bit of speed. He can run the base as well. That's what we're all perceiving. So he seemed like a somewhat of a five-tool player. And when you're not available, Nick, I mean, what good is it? What good is all that talent? And if you can't display it on the field, and then you fast forward to the year of, you know, the COVID year, and that, you know, and that really took a lot out of him physically. He got it pretty bad, and he couldn't physically play the game, I think, like he would have liked to. And then it was always something with him. It's always in a back. It's always a strain. It's always a leg thing. It's always a something, and to the point where
there's always a grimace on the face.
Yeah. To the point where our manager at the time is telling guys not to run out ground balls. And now we switch from don't run out ground balls to run hard, and they're still getting hurt. So it's just a maddening situation with him. In terms of my disappointment level, I guess I'm just more sad because I think it's a guy with a world of talent that just will eventually be wasted, and you'll never You'll never really see the ceiling for Yoan Moncada. And a lot of people maybe will look at him and maybe it's right. I don't know. Maybe perception is reality with all the other stuff that he's got going on in terms of, you know, the music videos and all that other stuff that surrounds him. And then you see the production on the field or not being on the field, he's going to get looked at, especially in this town on the South Side, as like, come on, dude, we just want you to love the game and want to be out there and, you know, put your best effort out there and put your body in the best shape it can be to be available. And I don't know that he does that.
Yeah, I don't know what his off season, workout scenario is like. But the results, like what we continue to see, these soft tissue things, there's a lot of fingers to, you know, point at it. There is something about guys getting paid a lot of money early in their career, you know, and the Sox like to do that. They like to lock guys up early on, sign them. And then I, as a fan, I sometimes wonder about motivation, you know, like, well, you just got paid. You got paid a ton for not really doing much yet.
Yeah.
And is there do you take your foot off the gas a little bit as an athlete? Again, I don't want to question, but I have to now start wondering, you know, like you're trying to create different scenarios, theories, angles of why is this happening? And maybe I have to just go back to Achman's razor philosophy that I mentioned earlier. It's just like, maybe his body won't allow him to do what he wants to do. He's not as talented as, you know, we were led to believe. Maybe we as fans hyped it up more than it should have been. I don't know, but I'm ready to cut bait on him, cut bait on Aloy, you know, keep Robert around a little bit if you can. But I think Robert's like, please, somebody offer a ton. I'd like to get out of here now. Somebody that, you know, is coming to the South Side though. Things are so bad, Pat, that Tommy Pham is going to help out and try to right this ship. A journeyman outfielder. I don't think his offensive numbers really jump off the pages, but he's going to be headed to the South Side, it sounds like, as another option.
Well, look at me. It's a good thing I can't get out of my seat because I have to be next to the mic. Otherwise, I'd do a back handspring. I'm so excited for Tommy Pham. Again, just another guy. I mean, you keep bringing in just guys that you're going to put them in a lineup and it's not going to make the rest of the lineup any better. And again, I'm not expecting Chris Getz at this point to be able to turn, water into wine, right? It is what it is at this point. So you're just going to continue to bring in warm bodies and try and, put a Band-Aid on a shark bite, I guess. Are Chris Getz's hands really tied at this point? Yeah, there's not going to be any deals to be made. You're not going to really do much, I don't think, before the trade deadline in terms of, you know, building for the future. So you're just going to have to watch and watch this team really just flounder. Does it get your seeds hot? I don't know.
No, it's just with everything that's going on and the injuries and the revolving door, and we're going to bring Colas up and then we're going to send him back down.
What the hell is that? Why did you do that?
You could make an argument that there needed to be an arm. We needed to bring up an arm, but it's like, why are you doing this to Colas? Like
you erase an option.
Well, I think because he was brought up last year and went through all of that and sent down, I don't know if it mattered as much. It's more of the, what are you doing to this guy? Do you have faith in this guy? Do you want to see this guy develop at the big league level? Like, what are you wasting your time with, you know, Kevin Pillar and some of these other guys? Is Colas part of this organization long term? Are you going to make a serious answer with that? Or are you going to do what you've kind of done with, you know, players in this organization and just, you know, mess around with their futures, you know, and just hang on to them and play them in weird spots. And, you know, I'm surprised he didn't come in and play first base, you know, for an inning or something. I mean, it's just a bizarre how things are running. When you're losing and everything is going bad, you can jump all over moves like that and say, what are you doing? What the hell is going on with this organization?
You know what I did the other day, Nick, just to feel good? For about 20 minutes of my life, I'm scrolling around YouTube and I'm, you know, just, and for, you know, just whatever, just kind of just some mind numbing stuff just to chill out, you know? And I came across all White Sox walk-off home runs since 1991. And that was a great 20 to 25 minutes of my life. You heard some great Hawk calls in there. And you know, it's just, you saw some guys that you forgot were on the team that contributed at some point and hit a walk-off home run. Robin Ventura was big for the walk-off home run. I forgot about that. A lot of
walk-off slams. He had a lot of electricity.
Yeah. So if you're just looking to feel better about your life, just go to YouTube and find that, 1991 to now, White Sox walk-off home runs. It's glorious. It'll make you feel really, really great inside.
You got the pass, man. You know, I said something about, you know, I think it was Saturday's loss. Like, this is where I like appreciate the 2005 World Series. I know people don't like talking about it, almost in the same vein of the 85 Bears. And why do we have to keep bringing it up? And here we go. We're going to roll out these players and we're going to discuss this team. And that's all we have.
Yeah.
You know, when you and I were at a good age where we could, appreciate that, and we watched just about every game we could. I mean, we were out and about. We watched a lot together. We watched the playoffs. I mean, you know, we got to experience that. That really happened. That wasn't a expectation or a promise or, nobody that's been around baseball, you know, penciled this in and said, oh, watch out for this team for the next couple of years. That really happened. And it's pathetic that we have so few of those in our history. But you tend to, in these moments where you just know it's going to be bad this year, and then you watch it and you're like, wow, this is really bad. This is worse than I expected. They are failing at all of the things they said that they were going to be good at. You got to go back to when there were actually good moments and just say, okay, you know, I did see good White Sox baseball at some point.
Does that, so do you think, and I don't know, because they seem very tight and they love each other, but is Getz, you know, pulling Pedro into his office and saying, listen, man, I put it out there to the fans and the media, whether it was lip service or not, that we were going to be a smarter baseball team. And we were lockstep on that. Remember Pedro, and we talked about it. And if I'm evaluating you right now as a manager, and your coaching staff, not just you, it's not just one guy that does everything in terms of the direction of a ball club on the field every day. But if I'm evaluating you and your team and your coaches, you're failing at the few things that I thought we could be better at. So please explain to me, Pedro, how we are going to at least turn that around. And I'm not asking you to turn it around and equate it to wins, because I don't think that's fair. I think it's just, but I think it is fair to ask, why can't we do these little things that you learn when you're in Little League better? Why?
Yeah, I think you'd have to then, I would assume Getz would kind of get into the weeds with Pedro of, you know, I've got to sit in on preparation. I'd like to sit in on meetings. What are you guys talking about? You know, what's the pitchers, the hitters, like what's your game plan? Like what's the information that's being collected that gets disseminated for these players? Like, you know, when you go through drills and in between games, and when you take a BP, and, you know, what's the approach? Because, you know, I vouched for you, like you're my guy, you know, I very well got you hired. Yeah. And I think Pedro knows he can't get another job like this at all. This is it. This is his job. Because if he gets canned, when he gets canned, nobody's looking for Pedro Grifol. No one's saying, I really got to get Pedro Grifol. Maybe somewhere in the organization, maybe he's thrown at a bench coach or a third base coach or something. But I don't see him being in a manager anytime soon. So he knows that Pedro's got to say anything he possibly can, anything at all, to hold on to this gig. And Getz, I don't know how much rope Reinsdorf is giving Getz. I mean, Reinsdorf spoke extremely highly about Getz, and obviously there was no search. Getz is the guy. So it all comes down to what is the vision for Reinsdorf? Because if he doesn't care, you know, if he just says, look, I'm really trying to get this stadium, folks. I need to get this South Loop Stadium. I need people to pay me billions of dollars take this, figure this out. I'm not paying anything. It's got to get built. This is what I want. I'm not too concerned about this team, you know, then nothing's really going to change. You know, he's going to keep the people that he's close with, the connections, everything's going to keep, you know, like a little family, like a little mom and pop thing. I mean, if he really cares and if he thinks, wow, you know, if this keeps going the way it's going, yeah, maybe no one's going to want to give this money to me. Maybe it just doesn't. People are going to say, go ahead, take this to Nashville. I don't care. Get out of here. You're not running. Try building a team before you build a stadium, Jerry. Like, try actually building a real team. You know, put your money up there and build a team. If he's concerned about that, I think he absolutely has to have talks, serious conversations with Getz. I don't think Getz is going anywhere. I heard a rumor, something got kicked around that Jerry was not only in attendance to Sunday's game, but that he was going to talk to Pedro after the game, like a real, me in my office, Mr. Grifol. You know, maybe they, you know, having a couple of milkshakes together and just laughing it all up. I don't know. I mean, why is now Jerry all of a sudden micromanaging this thing? I mean,
is it that, or is it in response to the story that came out this week that Jerry was ready to can Pedro, but he didn't because of the financial ramifications it would have had, you know, and then he's got to backtrack that and say that ain't true. All of a sudden. So, you know, maybe that's a clearing of the air there, possibly. But I don't know.
Why'd you have to do it on Sunday? Why didn't you do it, you know, on Friday, you know, the start of the series back at home? You know, hey, I wanted to just talk with you really quick. You know, that's all completely untrue. Like he says a lot of the things that come out about Jerry, you know, everything's denied. Nothing actually happened. I didn't say anything. I don't know. You know, again, it's, why is Pedro going to stay the manager? Because he's got another year on his contract. Jerry doesn't like to just pay people for not, you know, doing work. And I think, you know, Getz continues to vouch for this guy. And Jerry, I don't know if Jerry's trusting Getz and is maybe hands off and just doesn't care. Like we want him to care. You know, that's always the big thing, right, Pat? It's, you know, Reinsdorf is ruining our lives. Like, why doesn't Reinsdorf do this? Why doesn't Jerry do that? He doesn't think that way at all. Yeah. I mean, not even close to how we operate as Sox fans, how we want him to allocate money, how we want him to have the desire to win and be competitive. You know, he's doing it on his terms. So when you try to get into that mentality, then that's why you have Getz and Grifol still around here.
Yeah. And you have to remember this is an owner and that has said, whether it's been, again, another thing that I think he's refuted, but has said, if you're going to own a team, you're best off trying to be in second place because you show your fan base that you're trying to win, but you don't have to put all the money that it takes to, you know, to produce a winner. And he's also an owner of a team that doesn't own his own stadium, that has to pay some type of lease, but that is greatly reduced, or he doesn't have to pay any or something crazy like that if they draw under 2 million people every year. He's successfully done that year in and year out. He's got a sweetheart deal with the sports authority or wherever it is, the sports people of Illinois, whatever the hell that organization is.
I hope it is sports people. Sports people of Illinois, unite.
Yeah, the Human Fund, people for humans. So again, he looks at things a lot differently. And there was a caller again into the radio station this past week, and I think that he was possibly, I don't think he gives out his real name, but he speaks like he's got some very inside knowledge. Like he was a, part of the part of the board maybe, or part of the, he takes care of the trustees and all that kind of stuff. He was a trustee at some point. And he mentions all the time, he's like, listen, Jerry, and where he cares about the fans and cares about winning is probably about sixth or seventh on his list.
Sure.
You know, it's like, and it's weird because it's like the organization tries so hard to pump out the narrative. And I really hate when people say the narrative a lot because it really gets under my skin because that's become a popular term. Oh, that's just your narrative. But they really try and pump out this Jerry cares. Jerry really is baseball Jerry loves the game. And it's, you know, he doesn't.
That has to be a t-shirt giveaway.
If you are out there and you are a person that's a White Sox fan and you believe that Jerry Reinsdorf cares about you as a fan or producing a winner, I think that you really need to take your license, get your license taken away. You shouldn't be driving. You shouldn't be on the roads. You should not be allowed to.
People who say that, Pat, though, are like they're involved in the organization. They will. Oh, my goodness. They will protect him. You know, I told you about that time I went on a tour of the stadium way back. Like this was like 2017 or something. Took a tour of the stadium. And the woman that was given the tour, like, she was just trying to get through the facts. I mean, she was just literally just giving us a tour. I mean, I don't think she really knew, you know, her information very well, but she was with the club for a very long time, you know, a protected soldier to Jerry Reinsdorf. And, oh, you know, that's all we heard about was Jerry, you know, he cares so much. He comes to every single home game and, you know, he's always attentive. And, you know, it was just nothing about he's an amazing presence. That's, and it's just a big eye roll for me, but I agree with I don't deny any of that. I'm sure that's all true.
But I digress because we seem to go down that alley, and it's unfortunate with the way this team is that that's where we go is the lack of care and the ownership. And I feel like that's a chord we play a lot here, and it's understandable, but. I want to go back to, if you don't mind, you know, let's go back to the Pedro talk and the Getz talk and the, you know, the lack of fundamentally sound baseball that's being played. You obviously played up into your high school and college age, and you've been on a lot of teams before where I haven't, right? I'm just a ninth coach on a travel team for my son right now. So, you know, do you think at this level, you know, where these guys are at, it's like, okay, we got to do more infield. We've got to do more of this. We got to do more drills. We got to do more. Is pressing and doing more, will that make it better? Or is it going to just be exhaustion and people won't care eventually? Like, how would you turn it around if you were coaching this team?
That's a great question. I don't think more of those types of things is necessarily the issue. You know, this is stuff that, I think there are a lot of mental errors going on. You know, there it seems to be some miscommunication. Like, I hate to say the term meeting, but I think that's something that happens quite a bit with big league clubs. They have a lot of different types of meetings. I mean, you are broken up into different groups as a roster, as a club, you know, and that's what happened in high school and in college. It's like all the pitchers get over here. Now relievers are going to be broken up with starting pitchers because you're going to be working on different things and you're going to be game planning different ways, you know, and outfielders met, which is outfielders and infielders. And there was all team messages, but like those all team messages were being hammered away in spring. So I guess you kind of have to, maybe you have to have a closed door meeting and roll some film, you know, as they do in football. Like play it back for these guys,
yeah,
and just say this happened. This actually happened. The two of you almost colliding, the ball falling here, like you getting picked off, you know. But at the end of the day, though, it's also just talent, you know. It's just lack of talent. Like we are just being outmatched, in a pitching staff that was surprising a lot of us at the beginning of the season for the first 2-3 weeks. Is starting to get caught up, you know, because of their track record. They are who they are.
Yeah.
You know, now Crochet, you know, he got caught by the Cincinnati Reds. I don't think it was completely his fault. You know, I think there was some bad umpiring, which has been a theme this season, but he was touched up, man. He's mortal. And that's to be expected from Garrett Crochet. I mean, this is his first real run at things, but look at what he's doing though. Striking out, limiting his walks. I mean, he's still the talk in terms of starting pitching, in terms of the bright spots for this White Sox team. So I don't see how you turn it around. You know, I think you're gifted like a group of guys, and you know, there's some marginal things. You know, I talk about lineup construction quite a bit and how you handle your lineup, but like, what is Getz saying to Grifol though? That's the other thing, is because if Getz is limiting Grifol from doing a lot of the things that maybe he wants to do, or he wants to do more and he can't, because Getz is like, I can give you Tommy Pham, but buddy, I can't give you much else. But it's just this sense of baseball though, that they're playing. I know the talent wasn't going to be there. It's just, it almost looks like they don't care. They just don't care. And you talked about apathy at the beginning of the show. I get a sense of that just going through the motions right now, because you're off to a 2-13 start and you're like, woe is me. I knew this was going to be a tough season. Now it's in reality and it's a disaster.
Yeah. I would have to imagine there's players that have already checked out, which is insane to think about, since it's only April 14th today, right? There's so much baseball left. And I'm not saying that in the sense of it's early, we can turn it around. It's that, boy, if you've already checked out now, what's it going to look like in July? How are these guys going to get motivated to come to the ballpark and play in August when it's, you know, 98 degrees? It was a warm day today, but 98 degrees and humid.
The whole one game at a time thing and you know, the whole flush it stuff, which is a little sneak preview to, you know, our Pedro Grifol quote of the week. I get that. It's laughable. You know, it's just so corny that he's kind of used that as his like token saying, but you cannot do anything about what just happened. You know, somehow, some way, you as an individual player have to say, how can I improve on what I just did? How can I improve on my approach at the plate? You know, can I be better prepared when facing certain pitchers? You know, my defensive alignment, is there better communication? How can I be the change that I want to see, you know, on my team? You know, for pitchers, it's a whole different beast. You know, it's like, it's mechanical stuff. It's, you know, am I trying to overthrow? Am I trying to be too cute? You know, am I getting overextended on a certain pitch? Am I not, you know, that is a whole different thing that you really have to go back and trust eyes that are watching you and video on how you can write that. You know, from a hitting standpoint, you know, maybe cage time can improve some stuff, but you can't just go in there and just say, oh, I'm just going to get some cage time in. You know, and if anybody's gone like, hey, getting ready for the golf season, you know, with the Masters and, you know, here we are in the warm weather, you know, weekend duffers like myself are, hey, I can't wait to get out and play, but you know, I'd like to go to the range first. And like years ago, I just would go hit. I'm going to try to hit as far as I possibly can. I'm just going to hit my driver. Mm-hmm. And that changed over the years because you start working on little things, you know, short iron stuff. You start picking out spots to try to aim and hit, you know, you work your way through your clubs. Like now it's like, if I hit my driver just a small handful of times, that's a fine range for me because I'm working on other stuff. You know, footwork, you know, look, it's little things that could turn into, you know, bigger improvements, but you're doing that on the fly right now. You know, there are few off days. You know, you got Kansas City coming to town, their first place. Then you go on the road, a day off, then go to the road to Philly. You know, they're 8-8. They're hanging around the NL East right now in April. So doing this stuff on the fly is really, it's troubling. I think about Giolito when he was, you know, having that rough go when he put on all the muscle and he was bulked up and he had to all of a sudden, you know, pivot and kind of change things, mechanics and everything, because that was not the right move. Well, you're doing that in season. That's a really tough thing to do.
So in that locker room, Nick, I mean, obviously you've got, your let's call them stars, just for lack of you know, not having many stars on the team. You've got three of your stars that are out, right? Yep. I wouldn't necessarily call them leaders though. So you haven't lost any real, you know, player leadership, in my opinion. But who is that voice in the clubhouse? Who do you think guys are turning to in this time of, you know, adversity, right? Who can be the voice in the clubhouse to try to rally the troops to call guys out when they've done stupid things? Because I don't even know who that would be.
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, is Michael Kopech the longest tenured Chicago White Sox player right now?
Do you really
right
want
now?
That to be your leader in the clubhouse? This is a guy, Nick, that you wanted to go on a cocaine high walk through the desert before the season started.
Not cocaine. What I thought he should have went on an acid trip.
Oh, that's right.
Just go on an acid trip on the desert. Forgive me. No, I would not advocate for that. Where is he? I haven't seen Kopech in a while.
Well, he's got a nice. He's had some time off, just kind of. Well,
exactly. That's what happens when you're relegated to the bullpen, and you know, you think about being a closer, and there's zero opportunities for you to close a game. I kind of forgot about that guy. Yeah, I don't know what happened to your leaders. I don't know. You know, who are your veterans that have been around for a while?
Maldonado.
Maldonado's been on some successful teams. I mean, Brian Shaw was DFA'd, cleared waivers, and chose free agency instead of going to Charlotte. So he's a veteran presence. So you don't have him around. That is the problem. You know, it's Benintendi. I mean, you know, he's been around, but
can you be a leader though and be batting under 200? And again, batting average is not the stat it used
to be. I think you can. I mean, he's an all-star. I mean, he's had some at least a good season. I mean, he's had moments, right? He had some good times in Boston. And I think just somebody that's like seen a lot. I would respect a teammate that has been on some winning teams, that has been through some difficult situations. And, you know, like they knew how to talk to players. I think that's very important. Like you know what buttons to push. And, you know, everybody's like down on themselves right now. Everybody's pressing. Everybody is just hanging their head. And like a veteran that is a good communicator that could keep like the morale somewhat high, I think that, you know, I would appreciate that if I was going through something like this now, because you might look at somebody that's raking, just like absolutely demolishing, which we don't really have anybody like that, you know, on this team. You have Sheets, the Sheets game from this past week, but that's kind of been about it. But they might not be the ability to be a leader or like see attributes and teammates and in other people to help them. You know, yeah, like help them rise up. They're just like, hey, I'm crazy talented. This is how I do it. That's all I know. I can't help anybody out. It's like, good luck. All of you, good luck. I'm just going to continue to be.
You like the Talladega Nights quote? I eat crap excellence or something like that, whatever he said. But listen, if you don't have the problem lies, Nick, that we're having this discussion and we don't know who the leader would be in the clubhouse. So that just tells you really the answer right there, that there isn't anybody in the clubhouse that really has that ability to do so. So you just have a bunch of guys looking around at each other. And I don't think anybody's able to or willing to step up.
Well, and that's where Grifol comes in.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's where Pedro Grifol comes in. You know, that's where I think, like, what is a manager worth? Like, what's the point of baseball managers? Like, how much impact can they really have? You know, it's about managing personalities.
But I don't mean to cut you off, but I just think that, you know, a really good manager has, you know, three or four guys that are his guys that run the clubhouse. And I don't think a manager should have to be in there, rah, rah, let's go, guys. I just don't feel that way. I think it's got to be the leadership from within, and those are the teams that really have good clubhouses.
Yeah, I don't know if you need to be doing that rah-rah stuff and screaming at people and like getting just in a crouched position, like nose to nose, just verbally addressing them.
What a quiet day in the crouched position. What do you mean by that? Can you expound on that?
I think of that. What is it? Was it Will Forte or There was an SNL bit where Will Forte was just going off. And I think Peyton Manning might have been the guest or something. And Forte was in the basketball locker room. Maybe it was a high school basketball team. And he just was going bananas, berserk. And you get in that crouch position, kind of like a motivational speaker, Chris Farley. And okay. you're just like kind of right down into somebody's yeah. face because they're sitting on the bench or something or in their chair oh, by their locker. You're trying to get in their eye level. And just
got
really
it. Okay. I got it. I thought maybe like it was like an attack mode type of thing or pause up, you know, like a cat.
Everybody's fight. Standing around and Pedro
everybody's just in this crouch position. In a crouch ready position. To pounce on each other.
Well, you know what? Sometimes crazy works and there needs to be a whole lot of crazy to flip this thing around. I mean,
I'm telling you, let's get to Brooks Boyer. We got to have, you know, manage the team for a day. You would sell out that place. If you said, listen, you know what, for next Sunday's game, show up on a Monday night. And if you're the first 30,000 fans, we're going to draw one of you to manage the team next Sunday. I would go. Would you go for that chance?
Absolutely.
100%.
I'd buy two tickets.
Okay. Well, we'll put that memo in.
So again, look, you can go over the stats. You can go over the numbers. You can crunch everything. Crunch it again. It's not good. I mean, near last in baseball in almost all offensive categories. Just the amount of runs scored, I think 34 runs scored, something like that. Just atrocious. On base percentage, something that we thought was going to change with this mentality, this way the Sox were going to produce, you know, the type of baseball that they were going to play. I think they were tied for last with the Oakland Athletics in terms of on-base percentage. Sox have drawn the least amount of walks, which goes hand-in-hand with your on-base percentage, and not doing very well with the stolen bases and not being able to throw people out either. Again, just a few of the things that I remember hearing about that was going to change. Hmm. You know, be ready for this way of baseball. We're going to be taking extra bags. You know, we're going to be disciplined at the plate. I mean, Robbie Grossman comes along. I think he's been the highlight in terms of, you know, getting on base. Again, there's not a lot to brag about at all with this team. I try to find things that, well, at least they're doing this or this seems to be trending. I mean, you got Garrett Crochet and, you know, Sheets is not as bad as I thought he was going to be, you know, which is a horrible, like, that I will never, you know, you shouldn't say that to him if I ever meet him. You're not as bad as I thought you were going to be, Gavin Sheets. You know, he's got pop in his bat. You know, it's just few and far between. You know, you need so many more guys in a lineup that can create that danger and that balance. And, you know, it's just not there.
So, Nick, before we record, and because we're getting close to Pedro Grifol quote of the week time, I'm excited about that. We'd love to chop that up a little bit. Before we, you know, get together and do this again next Sunday, how many wins will the Sox have before we – how many more additional wins will the Sox have before you and I look at each other's beautiful faces again?
You know, you got Nick Nastrini going on the mound on Monday, which will be his first start. I was kind of excited to see what Nastrini can do. In terms of positives, Jordan Leisure, I've liked what I've seen from Jordan Leisure. Again, you don't get to see too much of it because the Sox just don't have those situations. You know, he could be trending to be, you know, in the closer kind of role in the future. I've liked Jordan Leisure. I'm excited to see what Nastrini can do. You know, I don't want to put a lot of, you know, pressure. Of course, you can't on a guy like that. This is a project. This is going to, you know, this is the year for this type of stuff. Let's just try to be positive and say he has a great outing. He has one of those miracle outings. You know, all those outings that pitchers have against us? It's like, oh, this guy's his first big league, you know, professional outing here, and he just blanks the White Sox. You know, how many yeah. times has that happened where we've never seen a pitcher and they've just mystified us?
Yeah.
Maybe Nastrini does that to the Royals. Maybe some of the Royals magic wears off. Maybe that's a great story to build around. Maybe you need something like that. Maybe Nastrini becomes the new clubhouse leader and team MVP. Oh, I don't know. I mean, anything can happen at this point. How many wins, man? I'll say they get two this week. You know, they get one against Kansas City. They get one against Philadelphia.
I'll say they get one. So they're putting him on like a one win a week pace. So how many weeks in the season are there? You extrapolate that out. I don't think that's 40 wins, right?
I don't think it is. No.
Well, there you go. So
no. This, it's 24, 25, something like that.
If you can still, maybe we should hedge our bet, our winning the central bet that you and I put in for $20 at plus 3,500 or whatever it was. Maybe we should hedge that now and whatever the under is on wins for this team.
I'd be open to that.
We should reverse that so we can at least, you know, have something. So we're hedging our bet a little bit.
I mean, you look at it and you're like, how is this team going to win 50 games? You know, like teams, look, it's a long season. You know, you see this in every good teams go on just losing streaks. Bad teams get hot for like a week or so. And to me, it's like, well, how are you getting hot? You know, like what type of baseball is being played by certain individuals? Like, again, I'm so forward thinking. Kind of like, well, who's going to be around this ball club beyond this year? There's a lot of guys that have 1 year deals. You know, what kind of production are we getting out of people that are built for 2025? You know, that's why with Mankata going down, and you know, maybe you see some guys like Ryan Ramos a little earlier than you thought you were going to see. You get a glimpse. You know, they get a tryout. It's going to be some tough watching, man. It's like, that is the understatement probably of the night. I mean, it's going to be some tough watching. I went over one more. And Clevenger's still coming around. We still got Clevenger to welcome back in a White Sox uniform. So he might be back.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Runners in scoring position, Pat. That's something that has troubled the White Sox for a while. It definitely did last year. Something that I know they wanted to work on. If my number crunching is correct, 15 for 95 this season with runners in scoring position. 15 for 95. Yeah.
So that's bad.
That's not good. That's not good. Nope. And it's just
I don't know what to say to it, Nick. I know that we should probably be talking during a podcast, but I don't know how you.
Sometimes I think you can like just have a moment where you're to let the listener and viewer know that your insides are crushing a little bit, you know, by reading a certain stat or quote or something. I think that's okay. It's like, because you can then pinpoint when a little bit of that fan kind of just crumbled and died right there.
Yeah.
You give it a moment, so to speak.
I do die a little each time I watch the White Sox. So there, it is what it is. I don't understand how you can be so awful situationally. And again, but this is not a thing that's new to this team this year. This has been happening for a long, long time, Nick. This is not.
Yeah.
This is not just because of this group. It's under this leadership, and you could go back to Chris Getz and him, you know, running the minor league system for whatever reason. And again, it's not like we've had a cavalcade of different guys coming up and through and making their debuts and having any kind of success of any kind or anything like that. But it's like, what is being taught in this organization to, you know, get guys on and get runners in when they're in scoring position, especially with less than two outs. It's been a long, long time since they've been successful in that area.
Before we get to, I got two Pedro quotes of the week. There was a moment that happened this past week. I think it was on Wednesday, and I think it was against Cleveland. And it was a great example of, you know, just a microcosm of what is happening with this White Sox team. And the Cleveland was running all over the Chicago White Sox. And Steve Stone, this is why you listen to the guy. I know, you know, he's rough sometimes on social media or whatever, but I love the stuff that he brings out. He's coming from that pitcher mentality, and he called out, just, you got to hold guys on. You got to give a second look. You got to vary up your looks. You know, their lead, base runners leads. I mean, they were taking bases, you know, at will, because our pitchers, whatever the situation is, that's either sometimes a catcher situation where they give a sign to the pitcher that you need to look or you need to pick off. I don't know who's monitoring it, you know, from the dugout, but I thought that was a great point of the little things, the little stuff that can change. You can change that. You can change how you handle holding runners on and varying up your looks as a pitching staff. You know, each pitcher, you know, that's your job. You know, work with your catcher, work with your middle infielders, whatever it is. But this has got to stop. Runners just at will. And Cincinnati ran all over the Chicago White Sox. So I just wanted to put that in there really quick, because just that fundamental stuff, that baseball IQ stuff, out the window.
And how come nobody's telling them? Like, at some point, where's Katz to come out of the dugout and say, listen, guy, you here's what I need you to do, and just go out there and do it. Again, he gets a free pass all the time for whatever reason. I don't know.
Well, yeah, things absolutely have to change in so many different ways. And you'll be watching, I'll be watching. Here's our Pedro Grifol quotes of the week. This was during the solar eclipse, or maybe right before the eclipse. This was Grifol on maybe watching the historical solar eclipse. I'm not going to watch it. It doesn't interest me that much. I'll watch videos of it to see what it looks like. I probably shouldn't say that because, you know, family and baseball, people don't believe, but I believe it. I live it, and that's all that matters. And then this was a post-game comment from Daryl Van Scoven, who covers the Sox for the Sun-Times. Pedro ended up watching it after all. So there was a great, years ago on SNL, I think Mick Jagger was on, and Mick Jagger was the host, and he was playing Keith Richards, and Mike Myers was playing Mick Jagger. And there's that, you know, Mick Jagger's imitating Keith Richards, and he's rambling on as Keith Richards will. And Mike Myers playing Jagger just is like, in English, Keith. And I just, sometimes when Pedro, you know, rambles on this day, I just think, in English, Keith, come again. What are you talking about here? People don't think you believe in family in baseball. I don't know. Glad he watched the solar eclipse. I'm glad he enjoyed it. This was after Saturday's loss, and it was a doozy to the Cincinnati Reds. Grifol said that the Sox can't wallow in their losses and already poor start. It can nosedive even more if they don't find a way to turn things around. You've got to flush these things, Grifol said. There's nothing you can do other than get a nice rest and get back at it tomorrow. Try to save the series and get ready for Kansas City on Monday. They rested, but they were not prepared, and they didn't produce on Sunday as they got swept. So there are your Pedro Grifol quotes of the week.
How many times... I know you don't partake anymore, and that's fantastic, but it's a good thing we don't play the Pedro Grifol flush it drinking game, because we'd have a lot of people having problems these days. Because it's every day. We're always flushing it.
Yeah, and I think he even made some comment like, I know I keep talking about it, but that's what you have to do. I'm serious. You just have to flush it.
He's got somebody holding up cue cards, and he's just reading it.
And I get that. I get the flush it, but then, like, you know, you got to build off of it. You've got to somehow improve. You know, if you throw all of it away, that's no good. You know, because then you're throwing away all the stuff you did wrong that you should really be remembering from.
Do you really think they're trying to flush it, and they're using too much toilet paper, and they've got a big clog right now, and they can't flush it?
I mean,
they need a rooter.
You want to talk about promos, just lean into this and just, you know, give out some plungers or something. You know, isn't like 1-800 Isn't there some? I thought there was a plumber sponsorship. You always see that in the bathroom.
1-800 plumbers. You could see that if you're at the urinal, they got 1-800 plumbers right there for you.
I would say that could be something that they want to maybe slap their logo on. You know, a plunger, give them out to the first 30,000 or something. They could tie it 30,000, in. Could also
be, me? You'd be giving away plungers for 9 weeks. You get 30,000. As the great John,
they'll be at the garage sales. You can go there and
get your own section right now. You don't have to worry about getting your own row. You
can sit
back, relax within your own section.
Yeah, I've heard from a couple people that were at the game on Friday, and they're like, I haven't seen a home Friday game like this with pretty nice weather in a long, long time. A lot of folks dressed as seats.
Well, that happens when you've got two wins, I suppose.
You know, it is an absolute pleasure to be joined by so many people in the chats week in and week out. And thank you so much for continuing to jump on in the audio and pass this podcast along to other Sox fans in your life. If they could stomach it, we do appreciate that. Subscribe to the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Even if you don't think you're going to watch too much, it really goes a long way. To subscribe, set the notifications on. Sometimes we try to sneak in an emergency podcast, and there hasn't been one.
Big news happens. Big news happens, Nick. You and I are on it. You and I cover this team like a blanket.
When big news happens to our Chicago White Sox team, we will be all over that with an emergency podcast. But we do this on Sunday nights, 9:15, on our Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Again, thank you so much. We are on Twitter X at Good Guys TV. We've got a Facebook fan page. Hey, for Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox.